Chapter 103. Drum brakes. Drum brakes. Background. Drum brakes were the first type of brakes used on motor vehicles. Even today, over 100 years after the first horseless carriages, drum brakes are still used on the rear of most vehicles, as shown in Figure 103-1. The drum brake has been more widely used than any other automotive brake design. See Figure 103-2. Although the disc brake has proven its superiority in extreme braking conditions, and has replaced the drum brake on the front axle of vehicles, the drum brake continues to have a number of advantages that contribute to its widespread use on the rear axle of most automobiles. Drum brake advantages. Self-energizing and servo action. The primary advantage of drum brakes is that they can apply more stopping power for a given amount of force applied to the brake pedal than can disc brakes. This is possible because the drum brake design offers a self-energizing action that helps force the brake linings tightly against the drum. In addition, some drum brake designs use an effect called servo action that enables one brake shoe to help apply the other for increased stopping power. Both self-energizing and servo action are explained in detail later in the chapter. Parking brake service. One advantage of drum brakes is that they make excellent parking brakes. A simple linkage fitted to the brake assembly allows relatively low effort from the driver to hold a heavy vehicle in place when parked. Disc brakes, which do not benefit from self-energizing or servo action, require a complex set of extra parts to provide enough force to work well as parking brakes. Drum brake disadvantages. Brake fade. Drum brakes are not very efficient at dissipating heat. The brake drum covers the linings, and most of the heat produced during braking must pass through the drum, from the inside out into the air. The greatest drawback of drum brakes is that they are susceptible to fade. Brake fade is the loss of stopping power that occurs when excessive heat reduces the friction between the brake shoe linings and the drum. The four types of brake fade include the following. Number 1. Mechanical fade. Mechanical fade occurs when the brake drum gets so hot that it expands away from the brake linings. The brake shoes then move outward to maintain contact with the drum, causing the brake pedal to drop toward the floor as additional brake fluid moves into the hydraulic system. Number 2. Lining fade. Lining fade occurs when the friction coefficient of the brake lining material drops off sharply because intense heat makes it slippery. Unlike mechanical fade, brake pedal travel does not increase when lining fade occurs. Instead, the pedal becomes hard and there is a noticeable loss of braking power. Number 3. Gas fade. Gas fade occurs under extended hard braking from high speeds. A thin layer of hot gases and dust particles can build up between the brake shoe linings and drum. The gas layer acts as a lubricant and reduces friction. As with the lining fade, the brake pedal becomes hard, and greater application force is required to maintain a constant level of stopping power. Number 4. Water fade. Water fade occurs when moisture is trapped between the shoes and drum, where it acts as a lubricant. This lowers braking efficiency until friction creates enough heat to evaporate the water. Refer to Figure 103-1. Typical brake system components showing disc brakes on the front and drum brakes on the rear. Refer to Figure 103-2. An exploded view of a typical drum brake assembly. Tech tip. Quick and easy drum brake adjustment check. Tap the brake drum lightly with a hammer or wrench. If the brake shoes are not contacting the drum will ring like a bell. If the shoes are contacting the sound will be muffled. Brake adjustment. Another disadvantage of the drum brake design is its need for an adjusting mechanism. As the brake shoe lining material wears, the clearance between the linings and drum increases, resulting in longer brake pedal travel. To maintain a high brake pedal, a mechanism must be included in the brake assembly for adjustment of the clearance between the brake shoe and drum. Most vehicles have automatic adjusters that maintain the proper clearance between the brake linings and the drum. Brake pull. Brake pull occurs when the friction assemblies on opposite sides of the vehicle have different amounts of stopping power. These differences can be caused by brake fade or misadjustment of the clearance between the brake linings and drum. Backing plate and wheel cylinders. Backing plate. The foundation of every drum brake is the backing plate that mounts to the steering knuckle on the front brakes, or to the suspension or axle housing on the rear brakes. See Figure 103-3. The backing plate serves as the mounting surface for all the other friction assembly parts. The backing plate also functions as a dust and water shield to keep contaminants out of the brake assembly. The edge of the backing plate curves outward to form a lip that strengthens the backing plate and fits inside the brake drum to help prevent water entry. The lip fits into a machined groove in the open edge of the brake drum to provide an even better water barrier or seal. This type of seal is called a labyrinth seal. See Figure 103-4. In addition to mounting holes for the various brake parts, the backing plate may also have openings that are used to inspect the wear of the brake linings, or adjust the lining to drum clearance. These openings are sometimes sealed with metal plugs that must be punched out the first time inspection or adjustment is needed. Rubber plugs are available to seal the holes and prevent water entry once the metal plugs have been removed. Refer to Figure 103-3. The backing plate is the foundation of every drum brake. There are normally six pads where the brake shoes contact the backing plate. Refer to Figure 103-4. A labyrinth seal is created between the lip of the backing plate and the groove in the brake drum. Shoe anchors. Shoe anchors prevent the brake shoes from rotating with the drum when the brakes are applied. The majority of drum brakes have a single anchor, but some drum brake designs use two or more. Many anchors are a simple round post that is permanently mounted on the backing plate. The brake shoes have semicircular cutouts where they contact the anchor, and the anchor positively locates the shoe on the backing plate. Another type of anchor is the self-centering or keystone anchor. See Figure 103-5. It is called a keystone anchor because of the angled shape similar to a keystone used on the top center of a stone arch. Refer to Figure 103-5. A keystone anchor allows the brake shoes to self-center in the drum. Refer to Figure 103-6. Piston stops prevent the wheel cylinder from coming apart. Piston stops. Some backing plates incorporate piston stops that prevent the wheel cylinder pistons from coming out of their bores when the friction assembly is disassembled for servicing. The stops may be part of a reinforcing plate positioned under the anchor, or they can be stamped directly into the shape of the backing plate itself. See Figure 103-6. When piston stops are used, the wheel cylinder must be removed from the backing plate before it can be taken apart for servicing. Shoe support pads. The shoe support pads are stamped into the backing plate and contact the edges of the brake shoes to keep the linings properly aligned with the center of the friction surface inside the brake drum. These pads are also called ledges or shoe contact areas. The support pads are slightly coated with special high-temperature silicone brake grease to minimize wear, prevent rust, and eliminate squeaking that can occur when the shoes move slightly on the pads during a stop. Refer to Figure 103-7. Cross-section of a wheel cylinder that shows all of its internal parts. The brake line attaches to the fluid inlet. The cup expander prevents the cup seal lip from collapsing when the brakes are released. Refer to Figure 103-8. The push rods are held in place by the rubber dust boots. As the wheel cylinder pistons move outward, the push rods transfer the movement to the brake shoes. Wheel cylinders. Hydraulic pressure is transferred from the master cylinder to each wheel cylinder through brake fluid. The force exerted on the brake fluid by the driver forces the piston inside the wheel cylinder to move outward. See Figure 103-7. Through push rods or links, this movement acts on the brake shoes, forcing them outward against the brake drum. See Figure 103-8. Drum brake shoes. Terminology. The linings of drum brakes are attached to curved metal assemblies called brake shoes. Most shoes are made of two pieces of sheet steel welded together in a T-shaped cross-section. See Figure 103-9. The outer edge is lined with a friction material that contacts the brake drum to generate the actual stopping power. The ends of the linings on most brake shoes are tapered to prevent vibration and brake noise, as shown in Figure 103-10. The curved metal piece on the outer portion of the shoe is called the lining table, the shoe rim, or platform. The lining table supports the block of friction material that makes up the brake lining. On some shoes, the edge of the lining table contains small V or U-shaped notches called nibs. The nibs rest against the shoe support pads on the backing plate when the shoe is installed. The metal piece of the shoe positioned under the lining table and welded to it is called the shoe web. All of the application force that actuates the shoe is transferred through the web to the lining table. The web usually contains a number of holes in various shapes and sizes for the shoe return springs, hold-down hardware, parking brake linkage, and self-adjusting mechanism. One end of the web usually has a notch where the wheel cylinder touches the shoe, while the other end commonly has a flat or curved surface where the shoe meets an anchor or adjusting link. The upper ends of the webs on dual servo brake shoes have semicircular cutouts called anchor eyes. See Figure 103-11. Brake shoes are parts that can be relined and reused many times if the web and lining table are not damaged. Brake shoes for any given application are usually available in both new and relined versions from suppliers. Relined brake shoes are usually sold on an exchange basis. At the time of purchase, a core charge is added to the cost of the relined parts. This charge is refunded when the old shoes are returned in rebuildable condition. Refer to Figure 103-9. Steel brake shoes are made from two stampings welded together, the web and the lining table. Refer to Figure 103-10. Tapered ends on the linings help to reduce brake noise. Refer to Figure 103-11. Typical drum brake shoe and the names of the parts. Refer to Figure 103-12. The primary, or forward-facing, brake shoe often has a shorter lining than the secondary shoe, or rearward-facing. Primary and secondary brake shoes. In a dual-servo drum brake system, the shoes in a dual-servo brake perform different jobs. The primary shoe, or forward-facing shoe, is self-energized by drum rotation to create a servo action that forces the secondary shoe more firmly against the drum. Because of this, the two shoes have physical differences and cannot be interchanged. To help deal with the added friction, heat, and wear it undergoes, the lining of the secondary shoe extends nearly the full length of the shoe lining table. See Figure 103-12. The secondary shoe lining material also has a high coefficient of friction to provide good stopping power. The primary shoe undergoes far less stress than the secondary shoe, and its lining is often shorter, sometimes less than half the length of the lining table. In addition, the lining material usually has a lower coefficient of friction. This prevents the shoe from engaging the drum too quickly or harshly, which could cause the brakes to grab or lock. On most dual servo brake primary shoes, the lining is positioned near the center of the lining table. However, in some cases, the lining may be positioned above or below the lining table centerline. Higher or lower lining positions provide better braking action, or prevent noise, in some vehicles. See Figure 103-13. Refer to Figure 103-13. Primary shoe lining may vary depending on the application. Refer to Figure 103-14. Riveted brake linings are quiet and reliable at high temperatures. Lining assembly methods. There are two main methods used to mount brake linings to the brake shoe. Riveting. The brake block is attached to the lining table or backing plate with copper or aluminum rivets. See Figure 103-14. Riveting has the following advantages. The major advantage of riveting is that it allows a small amount of flex between the brake block and lining table or backing plate. This play enables the assembly to absorb vibration, and the result is that riveted linings operate more quietly than bonded linings. Rivets are also very reliable and will not loosen at high temperatures. Riveting has the following disadvantages. Rivet holes, however, do create stress points in the lining where cracks are likely to occur. Riveted lining has a reduced service life because the linings must be replaced before the rivet head contacts the brake drum. The rivet can cause deep grooves to be cut into the drum, often requiring replacement if the worn brakes are not detected early enough to prevent damage. Bonding. Bonded linings use high-temperature adhesive to glue the brake block directly to the shoe lining table or pad backing plate as shown in Figure 103-15. Heat and pressure are then applied to cure the assembly. Bonding is a common form of shoe and pad assembly and is most often used to mount organic friction materials. Bonding has several advantages including the following. Without rivets, bonded linings can wear closer to the lining table or backing plate and provide a longer service life. If the linings wear too far, bonding adhesive is not as destructive to drums or rotors as rivets. Bonded linings also have fewer problems with cracking because they have no rivet holes to weaken the brake block. Bonded linings have the following disadvantages. If a bonded lining gets too hot, the bonding adhesive will fail and allow the brake block to separate from the lining table or backing plate. Bonded linings are also more prone to be noisy because they do not allow any vibration-absorbing flex between the brake block and lining table or backing plate. Refer to Figure 103-15. Many brake linings are bonded. Return springs. The brake shoe return springs retract the shoes to their unapplied positions when the brake pedal is released. This helps prevent brake drag and aids the return of brake fluid to the master cylinder reservoir. Most brakes use closed coil return springs to retract the brake shoes. See Figure 103-16. The coils on these springs are very tightly wound and contact one another when the spring is relaxed. Some vehicles have a single, large, horseshoe-shaped return spring. See Figure 103-17. The type, location, and number of return springs vary from one brake design to the next. All springs are installed in one of two ways. Some connect directly from shoe to shoe, while others connect from one shoe to the anchor post. Brake shoe hold downs. While the return springs retract the brake shoes to their unapplied positions, the brake shoe hold downs keep the shoes securely against the support pads on the backing plate. The hold downs prevent noise, vibration, and wear, but still allow the shoes to move out and back as the brakes are applied and released. The hold downs also provide enough freedom of movement to allow adjustments of the shoes outward as the linings wear. Shoe hold downs take many forms, as shown in Figure 103-18. The most common design is a steel pin installed through a hole in the backing plate and a corresponding hole in the brake shoe web. A spring fits over the end of the pin against the shoe web, and a special washer compresses the spring and locks onto the flattened end of the pin. Another type of hold down is a taper wound coil spring with a hook formed on its end. Because of its shape, this part is sometimes called a beehive hold down. The hook end of the spring is installed through a hole in the brake shoe web and attached into a retaining clip that fits into a corresponding hole in the backing plate. Refer to Figure 103-16. A typical drum brake assembly showing the support plate, or backing plate, anchor pin, and springs. Parking brake linkage. Most rear drum brake friction assemblies include a parking brake linkage. The linkage commonly consists of a cable, lever, and strut system that spreads the brake shoes apart to apply the brake mechanically. The parking brake strut plays a large part in many of the automatic brake adjusters. See Figure 103-19. Brake drums. The brake drum is not connected to the backing plate, but turns with a wheel. The drum mounts on the hub or axle, and covers the rest of the brake assembly. Brake drums are made of cast iron or cast aluminum with a cast iron liner. Many of these drum types may have ribs or fins on their outer edge to help dissipate heat. See Figure 103-20. Refer to Figure 103-17. A single spring steel spring is used on some drum brakes. The spring also takes the place of the shoe hold-down springs. Refer to Figure 103-18. Various types and styles of hold-down springs. Refer to Figure 103-19. A mechanical brake linkage is part of most drum brake assemblies. Refer to Figure 103-20. An aluminum brake drum with a cast iron friction surface. The cooling fins around the outside help dissipate the heat from the friction surface to the outside air. Tech tip. Purchase quality brake linings for best performance. While many brands of replacement brake lining provide acceptable stopping power and long life, purchasing factory brake lining from a dealer is usually the best opportunity to get lining material that meets all vehicle requirements. Aftermarket linings are not required by federal law to meet performance or wear standards that are required of original factory brake linings. Non-servo brake design. Purpose and function. A non-servo brake feature is that each brake shoe is applied individually. The action of one shoe has no effect on the action of the other. Many non-servo drum brakes use self-energizing action to improve their braking performance. Parts and operation self-energizing action occurs when the forward or leading shoe contacts the drum and the drum attempts to rotate the shoe along with it. However, the shoe cannot rotate because its far end, relative to drum rotation, is fixed in place by an anchor. As a result, drum rotation energizes the shoe by forcing it outward and wedging it tightly against the brake drum. The drum also attempts to rotate the reverse or trailing shoe as it contacts the drum. However, in this case, the far end of the shoe, relative to drum rotation, is not solidly anchored. As a result, drum rotation de-energizes the shoe by forcing it inward away from the brake drum. When this type of brake is applied with the vehicle backing up, the roles of the forward and reverse shoes are switched. The reverse shoe becomes the leading shoe, which is self-energized by drum rotation, while the forward shoe becomes the trailing shoe, which is de-energized. A leading shoe is always energized by drum rotation. A trailing shoe is always de-energized by drum rotation. The simple drum brake assembly in Figure 103-21 shows how the self-energizing process works. The first shoe from the wheel cylinder in the direction of drum rotation is the leading shoe. If the piston of a wheel cylinder moves in the same direction as drum rotation when the brakes are applied, the shoe it actuates is a leading shoe. If the piston moves opposite the direction of drum rotation, the shoe actuated is the trailing shoe. Leading shoes generally wear at a faster rate than trailing shoes because they are applied with greater force. Where a brake uses one leading and one trailing shoe, the leading shoe will sometimes have a thicker lining or one with a larger surface area than that of the trailing shoe. The thicker or larger lining balances the wear between the two shoes so that they will both need replacement at about the same time. Refer to Figure 103-21. Self-energizing action can increase or decrease the stopping power of a brake shoe. Double trailing brake. The least powerful non-servo drum brake is the double trailing brake. See Figure 103-22. This design has two trailing shoes and does not use any self-energization. Both shoes have the same size and shaped linings that are applied with equal force by a pair of single piston wheel cylinders. Each shoe is anchored at the end opposite the wheel cylinder that applies it. In many double trailing brakes, the back side of one wheel cylinder serves as the anchor for the brake shoe actuated by the other wheel cylinder. Leading trailing brake design. The non-servo leading trailing brake has one leading shoe and one trailing shoe. See Figure 103-23. Typically, a single, two-piston wheel cylinder is mounted at the top of the backing plate and the two brake shoes are anchored at the bottom of the backing plate. The brake design has one energized and one de-energized shoe regardless of whether it is applied while the vehicle is traveling forward or in reverse. This allows the leading trailing brake to work equally well in either direction. The leading shoe usually wears more than the trailing shoe. Leading trailing brakes are popular on the rear wheels of many small and front-wheel drive vehicles because, although they are not as powerful as a servo brake, they are less prone to lockup. They have the further benefit of making a good parking brake in both directions. Refer to Figure 103-22. A double trailing non-servo drum brake. Refer to Figure 103-23. A leading trailing non-servo brake. Dual servo brake design. Purpose and function. The dual servo brake is the most common drum brake design. The name servo comes from the fact that one shoe serves the other to increase application force. All servo brakes used on automobiles are of the dual servo design that works with equal force in both directions. The primary advantage of the dual servo brake is that it is more powerful than any of the non-servo designs. Another advantage of the dual servo brake is that it makes a good parking brake. Dual servo action not only makes the brake very powerful, it allows the brake to hold equally well in both directions. Dual servo brakes are more susceptible to pull than other brake designs, and their greater application force can lead to faster fade under extreme braking conditions. Note: dual servo brakes are also called duo servo, which is a brand name of the Bendix Corporation. Refer to Figure 103-24. A typical dual servo drum brake. Dual servo brake construction. The basic dual servo brake uses one anchor and a single two-piston wheel cylinder. See Figure 103-24. The anchor is usually mounted at the top of the backing plate with the wheel cylinder directly beneath it. The tops of the brake shoes are held against the anchor by individual return springs. The bottoms of the shoes are spaced apart by an adjusting link held in position by a third return spring that connects the two shoes. Adjusting link. The adjusting link consists of a star wheel that is part of an adjusting screw, a pivot nut that one end of the adjusting screw threads into, and a socket that rotates freely on the opposite end of the adjusting screw. See Figure 103-25. The outer ends of the pivot nut and socket are notched to fit over the brake shoe webs. Some adjusting links have a steel thrust washer and or spring washer installed between the socket and the star wheel. These washers allow easier rotation of the star wheel and help reduce brake squeal. Note: adjusting links generally have specific left or right hand threads and must be installed on the correct side of the vehicle. Primary and secondary brake shoes. Although dual servo brakes make use of self-energizing action to help provide servo action, the two brake shoes are not called leading and trailing parts as in non-servo brakes. Instead, they are identified as the primary shoe and the secondary shoe. To identify the primary shoe on a dual servo brake with a single two-piston wheel cylinder, point to the wheel cylinder, and then move your finger in the direction of drum rotation. The first shoe reached is the primary shoe and the other shoe is the secondary shoe. The secondary brake shoe provides approximately 70% of the total braking power in a dual servo brake. For this reason, the lining is usually somewhat larger than that of the primary shoe. In addition, some manufacturers use different types of friction materials on the primary and secondary shoes to help equalize wear. Dual servo brake operation. When a dual servo brake is applied, the wheel cylinder attempts to force the tops of both brake shoes outward against the drum. See Figure 103-26. As the primary shoe makes contact, it rotates with the drum because its far end, relative to the direction of drum rotation, is not directly anchored to the backing plate. As the primary shoe rotates, it forces the adjusting link in the secondary shoe to also rotate until the secondary shoe seats firmly against the anchor. Although the wheel cylinder attempts to push the top of the secondary shoe outward, the rotational force developed by friction between the brake shoes and drum is much greater than the force developed by hydraulic pressure in the wheel cylinder. As a result, the secondary shoe is held against the anchor. In effect, only one half of the wheel cylinder is used to apply the brakes. Refer to Figure 103-25. A typical dual servo brake adjusting link assembly. Refer to Figure 103-26. Dual servo brake operation. The primary shoe on the left exerts a force on the secondary shoe on the right. Servo action. Once all clearance is taken up between the brake shoes, adjusting link, and anchor, both brake shoes become self-energized like the leading shoes in a non-servo brake. The anchor pin prevents the secondary shoe from rotating, and the adjusting link, held in position by the secondary shoe, serves as the anchor for the primary shoe. Servo action then occurs as a part of the braking force generated by the primary shoe is transferred through the adjusting link to help apply the secondary shoe. See Figure 103-27. When a dual servo brake is applied with the vehicle moving in reverse, the primary and secondary shoe switch roles. The primary shoe is forced against the anchor while the secondary shoe moves outward and rotates with the drum to apply the primary shoe with a greater force. Refer to Figure 103-27. Dual servo action greatly increases the application force on the secondary shoe. Tech tip. Rear wheel lockup, check the adjustment. Servo action enables a drum brake to provide increased stopping power, but it can also cause the brakes to grab and lock if they get too far out of adjustment. As clearance between the shoes and drum increases, the primary brake shoe is allowed a greater range of movement. The farther the shoe moves, the more speed it picks up from the rotating brake drum. At the moment the slack is taken up between the brake shoes, adjusting link, and anchor, the speed of the primary shoe is converted into application force by servo action. If the primary shoe is moving too quickly, it will apply the secondary shoe very hard and fast, causing the brakes to grab and possibly lock the wheels. Automatic brake adjusters. Servo brake star wheel automatic adjusters. Servo brakes use three styles of star wheel adjusters. Number 1. Cable. See Figure 103-28. Number 2. Lever. See Figure 103-29. And number 3. Link. See Figure 103-30. All three adjusters mount on the secondary brake shoe and adjust only when the brakes are applied while the vehicle is moving in reverse. As the brakes are applied on a vehicle with a cable or a link automatic adjuster, the wheel cylinder and drum rotation combine to move the secondary shoe away from the anchor. Movement of the shoe causes the cable or linkage to pull up on the adjuster pawl. See Figure 103-31. If the brake lining has worn far enough, the pawl engages the next tooth on the star wheel. When the brakes are released, the pawl return spring pulls the pawl down, rotating the star wheel and moving the brake shoes apart to reduce the lining to drum clearance. Some servo brakes with cable-actuated star wheel automatic adjusters have an over-travel spring assembly on the end of the cable. See Figure 103-32. In this design, the adjuster pawl is mounted under the star wheel, and adjustment is made as the brakes are applied rather than released. The over-travel spring dampens the movements of the adjuster mechanism and prevents over-adjustment if the brakes are applied very hard and fast. It also prevents damage to the adjusting mechanism if the star wheel seizes or is otherwise unable to rotate. The lever star wheel adjuster makes the adjustment as the brakes are applied rather than released. The operation includes the following actions. As the secondary shoe moves away from the anchor, the solid link between the anchor and the top of the adjuster lever forces the lever to rotate around the pivot point where it attaches to the brake shoe. This moves the bottom half of the lever downward, which causes the pawl to rotate the star wheel and make the adjustment. The separate pawl piece is free to pivot on the lever to prevent damage if the star wheel will not rotate. When the brakes are released, the return springs lift the lever. If the brakes have worn enough, the end of the lever engages the next tooth on the star wheel and additional adjustment will be made the next time the brakes are applied. Refer to Figure 103-28. A cable-actuated star wheel adjuster. This type of adjuster makes the adjustment as the brakes are released. Refer to Figure 103-29. A lever-actuated star wheel automatic adjuster. This type of adjuster makes the adjustment when the brakes are applied. Refer to Figure 103-30. A link-actuated star wheel adjuster. This type of adjuster makes the adjustment when the brakes are released. Refer to Figure 103-31. The operation of a typical self-adjuster. Notice that the adjuster actually moves the star wheel. The star wheel adjuster uses left-hand and right-hand threads and must be installed on the correct side of the vehicle to function as designed. Refer to Figure 103-32. A cable-actuated star wheel adjuster with an over-travel spring. Non-servo star wheel automatic adjusters. Operation. The star wheel automatic adjusters used on non-servo brakes may be mounted on either the leading or trailing shoe. These types of adjusters work whenever the brakes are applied, in either the forward or reverse direction. A leading shoe design is shown in Figure 103-33. When the brakes are not applied, the adjuster pawl is held in position by the parking brake strut. When the brakes are applied and the primary shoe moves out toward the brake drum, away from the parking brake strut, the pawl spring pivots the pawl downward where it mounts on the brake shoe and rotates the star wheel to adjust the brake. When the brakes are released, the return springs retract the shoes and the pawl is levered back into its resting position by the parking brake strut. If the linings have worn far enough, the lever engages the next tooth on the star wheel and further adjustment will occur the next time the brakes are applied. The trailing shoe non-servo star wheel adjuster shown in Figure 103-34 works somewhat like the leading shoe design, but it makes the adjustment as the brakes are released rather than applied. The upper shoe return spring in this design returns the brake shoes and operates the automatic adjuster, as follows. When the brakes are not applied, spring tension holds the trailing shoe and the adjuster pawl tightly against the parking brake strut. When the brakes are applied, the trailing shoe moves out toward the drum and away from the parking brake strut. This allows the adjuster pawl, which is restrained by the return spring, to pivot where it attaches to the brake shoe, causing the adjuster arm to move upward. If the brakes have worn far enough, the arm will engage the next tooth of the star wheel. When the brakes are released, the return spring pulls the brake shoes back together and the parking brake strut levers the adjuster pawl downward to rotate the star wheel and adjust the brakes. Refer to Figure 103-33. A non-servo brake with a lever-actuated star wheel automatic adjuster on a leading shoe. This type of adjuster makes an adjustment as the brakes are applied. Refer to Figure 103-34. A non-servo brake with a lever-actuated star wheel automatic adjuster on the trailing shoe. This type of adjuster makes the adjustment as the brakes are released. Ratchet type automatic adjusters. Most ratchet automatic adjusters use movement of the brake shoes to adjust the lining to drum clearance. The adjustment of a ratchet adjuster is carried out by two parts that have small interlocking teeth. As the adjustment is made, the two toothed elements ratchet across one another. Once adjustment is complete, the teeth lock together to hold the brake shoes in their new positions. Refer to Figure 103-35. A lever latch ratchet automatic adjuster. Tech tip. Cool the brakes before backing. Self-adjusters can over-adjust the rear drum brakes if the brake drums are hot and have increased in diameter due to the heat. For example, if a pickup truck towing a boat had to brake while backing down a long, steep grade to the boat ramp, the rear brake drums could become larger in diameter due to the heat created during braking. The brakes could over-adjust if the driver repeatedly depresses and releases the brake pedal while backing the trailer down the boat ramp. Then, after the boat has been removed from the trailer and the rear brakes have cooled, the drums will shrink and keep the rear brakes from releasing, preventing the truck from moving up the ramp. Note: some drum brakes are equipped with a biometallic heat sensor that prevents the self-adjusters from working if the brakes are hot. Lever latch ratchet automatic adjuster. The lever latch automatic adjuster installs on the leading shoe of a non-servo brake and operates whenever the brakes are applied. See Figure 103-35. This design consists of a large lever and a smaller latch with interlocking teeth. A spring on the latch piece keeps it in contact with the lever to maintain the adjustment. One end of the parking brake strut hooks into an opening in the lever and the other end is held against the trailing brake shoe by a strong spring. As the brakes are applied and the shoes move outward toward the drum, the parking brake strut pulls on the adjuster lever and forces it to pivot inward from where it attaches to the top of the leading shoe. If the brakes are sufficiently worn, the bottom of the lever will ratchet one or more teeth on the latch. When the brakes are released, the parking brake strut, which bottoms against the lever, will hold the shoes farther apart to reduce the lining to drum clearance. Refer to Figure 103-36. A strut quadrant ratchet automatic adjuster. Strut quadrant ratchet automatic adjuster. The strut quadrant automatic adjuster is used on some non-servo brakes. See Figure 103-36. The strut quadrant adjuster consists of three basic parts. Number 1. The parking brake strut. Number 2. Adjusting quadrant. And number 3. A quadrant spring. The strut has a toothed post solidly mounted on its underside. The adjuster quadrant pivots on a pin that slips into a notch in the end of the strut, and the back side of the quadrant has a toothed, cam-shaped surface that interlocks with the toothed post on the strut. The quadrant also has an arm that extends through an opening in the web of the leading brake shoe. The outer side of this arm serves as the brake shoe stop when the brakes are released. The quadrant spring holds the quadrant in contact with the post to maintain the adjustment. Step 1. When the brakes are applied, the leading shoe moves out toward the brake drum. Step 2. If there is sufficient wear of the brake lining, the edge of the slot in the shoe web contacts the inner side of the adjuster quadrant arm and pulls it outward. Step 3. When this happens, the toothed section of the quadrant is lifted away from the post on the parking brake strut. Step 4. The quadrant spring then rotates the quadrant until its pivot pin is bottomed in the slot in the parking brake strut. Step 5. When the brakes are released, the quadrant returns inward with the leading shoe. And Step 6. The toothed section of the quadrant then engages the teeth on the strut post, causing the quadrant arm to remain in its new extended position that holds the shoes farther apart and reduces the lining to drum clearance. Review questions. Question 1. Describe the difference between a dual servo and a leading trailing drum brake system. Question 2. List all the parts of a typical drum brake. Question 3. Explain how a self-adjusting brake mechanism works. Question 4. Why should a driver allow the brakes to cool before backing a long distance? Question 5. What is a labyrinth seal? Chapter quiz. Question 1. A vehicle with drum brakes on the rear wheels will usually have brakes on the front wheels. A. Expanding shoe. B. Disc. C. Banded. D. Internal shoe. Question 2. Technician A says that drum brakes can fail to slow the vehicle if driven through deep water. Technician B says that when drum brakes get hot, the brake pedal will drop because the drum expands away from the shoes. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither technician A nor B. Question 3. Two technicians are discussing drum brake shoes. Technician A says that forward and rearward facing shoes are the same and can be installed in either position on any drum brake system. Technician B says that the longer lining should always be placed toward the front of the vehicle. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 4. Which part of the drum brake shoe contacts the ledges on the backing plate? A. Anchor I. B. Nib. C. Web. D. Lining table. Question 5. A typical drum brake backing plate has how many shoe support pads, also called ledges? A. 3. B. 4. Circa 6. D. 8. Question 6. Which lining does most of the braking on a dual servo brake? A. Front, forward facing. B. Rear, rearward facing. C. Both contribute equally. D. Depends on the speed of the vehicle. Question 7. Which lining wears the most on a leading trailing brake? A. Leading, forward facing. B. Trailing, rearward facing. C. Both contribute equally. D. Depends on the speed of the vehicle. Question 8. Technician A says that star wheel adjusters use different threads, left and right-handed, for the left and right sides of the vehicle. Technician B says that a pawl controls the teeth of the star wheel adjuster. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 9. Technician A says that self-adjusters used on most drum brakes work when the brakes are applied, then release while traveling in reverse. Technician B says that some adjusters can over-adjust if the brake drums are hot. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 10. Two technicians are discussing drum brake self-adjusters. Technician A says that a frozen star wheel adjuster can cause the brakes to lock up due to the adjusting lever being unable to move the adjuster, causing the linkage to bind. Technician B says that some brakes self-adjust when the brakes are applied rather than when released. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. End of chapter 103.